morning, everyone.
The new issue of Invocation is available. If you haven't received it, you can take a copy as you go out at the end. We're reading in Book 1, Book of Beginnings, Canto 5, The Yoga of the Spirit's Freedom and Greatness. And we've reached page 83. We stopped reading at the break on page 83. This is a second stage in the yoga of King Asvapati. And before looking in detail, we have to read now to the end of the canto. Will you start, Ramanarayana? Page 83 at the break.
All was uncovered to his seeless eye, a secret nature stripped of her defense. Once in a dreaded half-life formidable, overtaken in her mighty privacy, lay bare to the burning splendor of his will. In sedary chambers, lit by a strange sun, and opening hardly to hit mystic key, her perilous arcanes and hooded power confess the advent of a mastering mind and bore the compulsion of a time-born game. Incalculable in their wizard moves, immediate and invincible in the act, her secret strengths, native to greater worlds, lifted above our needy limited scope the occult privilege of demigods and the sure power pattern of her cryptic signs, her diagram of geometric force, her potencies of marvel fraught design, courted employment by an earth-nursed might. A conscious nature's quick machinery, armed with a latent splendor of miracle, the prophet passion of a seeing mind, and the lightning bareness of a free soul for all ones, impossible, deemed, could now become a natural limb of possibility, a new domain of normalcy supreme.
Thank you. Paula.
An almighty occultist erects in space this seeming outward world which tricks the sense. He weaves his hidden threads of consciousness. He builds bodies for his shapeless energy out of the unformed and vacant vast. He has made his sorcery of solid images, his magic of formative number and design, the fixed, irrational links none can annul. This crisscross tangle of invisible laws, his infallible rules, his covered processes, achieve unerringly an inexplicable creation where our error carves dead frames of knowledge for a living ignorance.
Thank you.
In her mystery's moods, divorced from the Maker's laws, she too as sovereignly creates her field, her will shaping the undetermined vasts, making a finite of infinity. She too can make an order of her captive. As if her rash superb waged to outvie the veiled creator's cosmic secrecies. Rapid footsteps of her fantasy, amid whose falls wonders like flowers rise, are surer than reason, defter than device, and swifter than imagination's wings. All she new fashions by the thought and word, compels all such by her wand of mind.
Thank you. Yes, please.
Mind is a mediator, divinity. Its powers can undo all nature's will. Mind can suspend or change Earth's concrete law. The franchise from Earth habits, drowsy seals. The leaden grip of matter it can break. Indifferent to the angry life of death. It can immortalize a moment's work. The simple fire on its fading course, the casual pressure of its slight ascent, can liberate the energy dumped and pent. Within its chambers of mysterious trance, it makes the body's sleep a puissant arm, holds still the breath, the beating of the heart. While the unseen is found, the impossible done, communicates without means the unspoken thought. It moves events by its bare, silent will, acts at a distance without hands or feet. This giant ignorance, this dwarfish life, it can illumine with the prophet sight, invoke the bakshich, rapture the fury's goad, in our body arouse the demon of the god, calling the omniscient and omnipotent, awake a forgotten almighty is within.
Thank you. Don?
A shining emperor, even in this rigid realm, mind can be king. The logic of its demigod idea in the leap of a transitional moment brings surprises of creation never achieved, even by matter's strange unconscious skill. All's miracle here, and can by miracle change. This is that secret nature's edge of might. On the margin of great immaterial claims, in kingdoms of an untrammeled glory of force, where mind is master of the life and form, and soul fulfills its thoughts by its own power, she meditates upon mighty words and looks, on the unseen links that join the parted spheres. Thence, who observes her voice, to bring the light of her mysterious realms. Here, where he stands, his feet on a prostrate world, his mind no more cast into matter's mold. Over their bounds and skirts of splendid strength, carrying her magician close, and the formulas of their stupendous speech to heaven and hell become purveyors to earth, and the universe the slave of mortal will.
Thank you.
They meet at least with veiled and mirrorless thought, with alien infections, our human life. Immediately in the world magician's ways, she invents for herself bound freely its grooves, and feigns for magic freaks the binding holes. All worlds she made the partners of her deeds, accomplices of her mighty violence, her daring leaps into the impossible. From every source she has taken her cunning means, she draws from the free law of marriage of the planes, elements, for her creation and the force. Wonder wealth of knowledge incalculable, the compendium of divine invention feats. She has combined to make an only tool of liberated, suppressed beings. In her unaged, Circean wonderland, pell-mell, she shepherds her occult mightinesses, her memories, the memories of the craft of the infinite, jets of the screen subliminal practice, tabs of the family of unconscious, freedom of sovereign truth without the law, thoughts that were born in the immortal world, oracles that break out from beyond the shrine, warnings from the demons, inner voice, and peeps and lightning leaps of prophecy and intimations to the inner ear, abrupt interventions, star and absolute, and the superconscious and accountable act have woven her balanced web of miracles and the weird techniques of her tremendous art.
Thank you.
This bizarre kingdom passed into his charge as one resisting more the more she loves her great possessions and her power. herself she gave for rapture and for use. Absolved from aberrations in deep ways, the ends she recovered for which she was made. Turned against the evil she had helped, her injured love, her invisible needs, her dangerous moods and arbitrary force she surrendered to the service of the soul and the control of the spiritual will. A greater despot tamed her despotism, assailed, surprised in the fortress of herself, conquered by her own unexpected king, fulfilled and ransomed by her servitude. She yielded in a vanquished act. Her sealed hermetic wisdom forced from her fragments of the mystery of omnipotence.
Franz.
The modern sovereign is an occult force, the threshold guardian of the earth's scenes beyond. She has canalized the outbreaks of the gods and captives of intuitive sight along the road of shimmering discoveries. The worlds of the marvelous unknown were near. Behind her, an ineffable presence stood. Lorraine received their mystic influences. Their lying forces crouched beneath her feet. The future sleeps unknown behind their doors. Abysms infernal gaped around the soul's step and called to its mounting vision peaks divine. An endless climb and adventure of the ideal that tirelessly attempted the explorer mind and countless voices visited the charmed ear. Figures passed and were seen no more. This was the forefront of God's thousand fortunes, beginnings of the half-screened invisible.
Thank you. Mi Hong.
A magic porch of entry glimmering, covered in a number of screened light, a court of the mystical traffic of the world, a balcony and miraculous arcade. Above her lightened high immensities, all the unknown looked out from boundlessness, enlarged upon an edge of hourless time, gazing out of some everlasting now, its shadows gleaming with the birth of gods, its bodies signaling the bodiless, its foreheads glowing with the oversoul, its bones projected from the unknowable, its eyes dreaming of the ineffable, its faces starring. Life in him learned its huge subconscious prayer. The little fronts unlocked to the unseen bars, her girls stood nude. Afar transcendences framed in transparencies of crowded light.
Thank you. François, tu veux lire? Non? Pas aujourd'hui, une autre fois. You read?
Upon a wall of the most phenomenal in the world, concrete in
Thank you.
In this drop from consciousness to consciousness, each lean on the occult inconscience power, the fountain of his needed ignorance, action of the limits by which it lives. In this soul, from consciousness to consciousness, each lifted tops to that from which it came, origin of all that it had ever been, and home of all that is that it cloud still become, sorry, that it could still become, an organ scale of the acts mounting to their climax, endless calm, faces of the many visaged, wonderful, predestined stadia of the evolving wave, measures of the statue of the growing shore, they interpreted existence to itself, and meditating twist the heights and deeps, united the hailed married opposites, and linked creation to the ineffable.
Thank you.
The last high world was seen where all worlds meet. In its summit gleam, the night is not, nor sleep. The light begun of the Trinity Supreme. All there discovered what it seeks for years. It filled the planet with boundlessness and rose into its own eternities. The inconscient found its heart of consciousness, the idea and feeling groping in ignorance, at last lost. Passionately the point of truth, the music form in matter silences. Locked mute, out of the inevitable's fathomlessness, the meaning it had held but could not pass. The perfect rhythm, now only sometimes dreamed, an answer brought to the tall knot's hungry need, rending the night that had concealed on the moon, giving to her her lost forgotten soul. A grand solution closed the long universe, in which the heights of mortal effort end, reconciling wisdom looked on life, it looked the striving unknowns of mind, and took the confused refrain of human hopes, and made of them a sweet and happy god, lifted from an underground of pain, the inarticulate murmur of our lives, and found for it a sense in the living.
Thank you.
A mighty wonders. Perpetual theme. It called the soul's faint scattered utterance. Red heartbeat wicks our lives in rigid thought. Or myth is drowsed in coma, or matter's breast, heard like disjointed mutterings in sleep. It grouped the golden links that they had lost and showed to them their divine unity. Saving from the error of divide itself, the deep spiritual cry in all that is. All the great words that toil to express the one were lifted an ever-burning revelation's fire and the immortality of the eternal. There was no quarrel more of truth with truth. The endless chapter of their differences retold in light by an omniscient cry, traveled through difference towards unity. In one search, lost every tinge of doubt, led to its end by an all-seeing speech that guards the initial and original thought, the finality of an ultimate phrase. United were time's creative mode and tense to the style and syntax of identity.
Thank you.
The day swelled from the last musing deeds, an anthem pealed to the triune ecstasies, a cry of the moments to the immortal's bliss. As if the strokes of a cosmic goal, the hierarchy of climbing harmony, people with voices and with visage, aspire in the crescendo of the gods, from metal's abysses to the spirit's peaks, above where the immortal changeless seeds, white chambers of dalliance with eternity, and the stupendous gates of the alone. Across the unfolding of the seeds of self appear the deathless countries of the one, and many miracle consciousness enrolled, vast pain and process and unfettered norms, a larger nature's great familiar roads, a franchised from the net of earthly sense, calm continents of potency were glimpsed, homelands of beauty shut to human eyes, half seen at first through wondrous gleaming lids, surprised the vision with felicity. Sun belts of knowledge, moon belts of delight, stretched out in an ecstasy of whitenesses beyond our indigent corporeal range. There he could enter, there a while abide, a voyager upon uncharted routes, fronting the viewless danger of the unknown. Adventuring across enormous realms, he broke into another space and time.
So we go back to the break on page 83. Manoha.
Food was uncovered to his sealless eye. Secret nature stripped out of her defense. Once in a dreaded half-life formidable, overtaken in her mighty privacy, lay bare to the burning splendor of his will. In shadowy chambers lit by a strange sun, and opening partly to his mystic keys, her perilous arcanes and hooded powers confessed the advent of a mastery mind and bore the compulsion of a time-born gaze. Incalculable in their wizard modes, immediate and invincible in the act, her secret strengths, native to greater worlds, lifted above our needy, limited scope the occult privilege of demigods and the sure power pattern of her cryptic signs, her diagrams of geometric force, her potencies of marble fraught design, courted employment by an earth-nursed mind.
Thank you. All was uncovered to his sealless eye. As a result of this transformation, which has come on his whole nature, Asvapati's whole nature, as a result of that intense aspiration, which took him off like a rocket into the heights, now he's able to see things that he couldn't see before. His eye is unsealed, his power of vision. And he becomes aware of this secret nature. This is not earth nature, and it's not either the higher divine nature. It's something else. This is a very, very challenging and mysterious passage, and I've really gone into it in depth. And I've come to the conclusion that this secret nature who's referred to here is what Mother and Sri Aurobindo call elsewhere, both of them separately have referred to her as the mother of dreams. And in the next section, Sri Aurobindo tells us that she's a threshold guardian of the earth scenes beyond. This secret nature rules the intermediate zone between our material world and the subtle world. There's a borderline, and she rules that realm there. And she has been dreaded, this dangerous power who rules on the borderline, when the seeker becomes aware of her in this half-light. She seems so powerful and even terrifying. But now Asvapati with his new way of seeing and knowing, the new power that has come to him, is able to overtake her in her mighty privacy, and she has to do what he commands her to do. She lay bare to the burning splendor of his will. So she has to yield her powers to him. In the rest of the section, Shobindo is going to describe what those powers are. She keeps them in shadowy chambers lit by a strange sun, a sun of consciousness, but a consciousness which is not our earthly consciousness, and it's not the pure spiritual consciousness either. There, those chambers are very difficult to unlock. You have to have the right mystic keys. And that's where she keeps all her secrets, her perilous arcanes. Arcanes or arcanas, they are secret occult powers. And they are dangerous, or they can be dangerous. Her hooded powers, they are disguised. But when Aswapati enters there, they confessed the advent of a mastering mind. They surrender to him. They bear the compulsion of a time-born gaze. His power of vision has developed in the human world on earth, and he is able to master these secrets and these powers. These powers are incalculable in their wizard modes. They can do unexpected things, but they're very powerful, immediate and invincible in the act. These are her secret strengths, and they are native to greater worlds, the subtle worlds beyond this material world, worlds that are lifted above our needy, limited scope. Those powers are the occult privilege of demigods, of half-divine beings. There are also the sure power patterns of her cryptic signs. People who do occultism or practice magic, they use certain diagrams that have force, no? Her diagrams of geometric force, her potencies of marvel-fraught design, designs that are loaded with wonders. All these powers, secret powers, courted employment by an earth-nursed might. They are asking to be used. They are offering themselves to be used by the earth-born power of Aswapati. Anybody would like to ask anything?
It means many gods, they are happy to serve the purpose of earth, correct?
When somebody has reached a certain level of development, then they can use these powers. Otherwise, the powers use them, and that's why they are dangerous. Well, Narad, for example, is a demigod, but a half-divine being. But I had to explain some lines from this section to somebody the other day, somebody from Russia. And so I reminded him about the ancient Russian fairy tales. Actually, they are full of occult and spiritual knowledge, if we can read the symbolism in them. So there's a creature that I think is somehow related to this secret nature. She's called Baba Yaga. Yeah?
Baba Yaga.
Baba Yaga, yes. So she's quite a dangerous character.
Yeah. No.
If you come across her on your pilgrimage in the forest, there's her little hut on its chicken's legs, turning round and round. And the prince who represents the seeking soul Actually, he has to command it. He says, little house, put your back to the forest and your face to me. Hmm? And then when he can enter Baba Yaga's house, she tries to beguile him to sleep or to, but he says, draw me a hot bath, give me a good meal, then we'll see. You know? He makes her do his will, and then she becomes helpful and gives him guidance for his further journey. So it's something like that. You know? And it's talking about these dangerous powers that can come to us on as we explore, as we move from our earthly reality towards the subtle worlds. There's this, Sri Aurobindo refers to it as this dangerous intermediate zone.
Is it the same as the lower level of the cosmic consciousness, the intermediate zone?
I don't know. But it's described in several places in Savitri.
Sri Aurobindo refers to the need to have the psychic being at the front.
Yes, precisely.
To go through that.
Yes. And we see Savitri also entering this zone, you know, when she goes within herself. So it's, we can say, somewhere in the subliminal region, perhaps. And he says souls can get trapped there, stuck. It's very difficult for them to escape if they get hypnotized by the marvels and of that realm. So that's why he's using this word perilous and dreadful here. But Asvapati is not in danger because he's already gone beyond these lower temptations. Now these occult powers, which can be useful, are offering themselves to him to be used by his higher consciousness.
Secret nature.
Yeah, he says it's a secret nature, yes. And we know that there are human beings who have certain occult powers. So we will see what are they using? What is that power that they are using to do things that seem incredible and miraculous and magical to us?
The North American Indian people, they have this knowledge very much and described it also. So earlier time, the societies had this knowledge.
Yes, I mean, that's why they are. That's why it's there in the Russian fairy tales that it was known. But you have to go through certain purifications and disciplines before it's safe for you to enter there and to use those powers. So shall we read on? Would you like to read? A conscious nature. Thank you. So this secret nature is conscious, and she has a way of working, an automatic kind of working, a machinery, but it's also quick. This can, of course, mean speedy, but it can also mean alive, that it's living. It's not just a mechanical machinery. It's a living machinery. So this gives a kind of weapon or an instrument to Asvapati. It arms him with a latent splendor of miracle, the possibility of working astonishing miracles. He can use that power with his seeing mind, which is looking into the future and aspiring for a very different, much better future for humanity. And especially he can use it because he's become a free soul force with a great power, a lightning bareness. There's nothing complicated or superfluous about him. This mind of his
this soul force of his is pure and accurate. So joined with this secret nature, everything that once seemed to be impossible, deemed means supposed or believed, everything that was believed to be impossible could now become a natural limb, a natural tool or action of possibility, a new domain of normalcy supreme, could become normal, but not on our level, on a much higher level. So now Sri Aurobindo is going to describe how that could happen.
Can I ask you something?
Yes, please.
I still can't get the understanding completely. We are talking about qualities which are not direct, immediately connected with the soul or with the person. Yeah? These are qualities which are available for souls.
Right. This is a level of nature, a realm of nature. But it's not this outer material nature that we are used to, and it's not the higher spiritual nature. It's something in between, I would say, on the subliminal level. It will become clearer as we read. Would you read?
An almighty occultist erects in space this seeming outward world which tricks the sense. He weaves his hidden threads of consciousness. He builds bodies for his shapeless energy. Out of the unformed and vacant vast he has made his sorcery of solid images, his magic of formative number and design, the fixed irrational links none can annul. This crisscross tangle of invisible laws, his infallible rules, his covert processes, achieve unerringly and inexplicable creation where our error carves dead frames of knowledge for our living ignorance.
Yes. He's talking about our creation. Our world has been brought into existence by an almighty occultist, somebody who has secret powers and knowledge. The Creator has erected in space this seeming outward world which tricks the sense. It misleads our senses. The picture that we have of the world around us is an inaccurate one. Sri Aurobindo says because the way that we perceive it is through a distorting medium. It's as if we're looking at it through a veil or in a mirror, one of those distorting mirrors. This seeming outward world, this sort of appearances, which tricks the sense. And that almighty occultist, he weaves his hidden threads of consciousness. He builds bodies for his shapeless energy. All these bodies are moved and inhabited by his formless energy. Out of the unformed and vacant vast, out of the emptiness, the void, the asat, he has made his sorcery, his magic of solid imagery, all these solid forms, his magic of formative number and design. The physicists are amazed when they investigate the properties of matter, how important number and proportion and geometry is in creating all this magic. And he's also created fixed, irrational links. They can't be logically explained, but none of us can annul, we cannot cancel out those links. He's made this universe full of a crisscross tangle of invisible laws, so difficult to disentangle them. His infallible rules, his covered processes, all together these things achieve unerringly, without the slightest little mistake, this inexplicable creation, this creation which is a mystery and a puzzle to us. But here in this creation, our error, our erring minds create dead frames of knowledge for a living ignorance. We are in a state of living ignorance, and we are trying to understand this inexplicable creation, and we create formulas and explanations. So, but these are all dead frames. But we are living. No? Our ignorance is living and progressing more and more and more towards knowledge. So that's about the magician, the occultist, who has created the outward world. Now Sri Aurobindo is going to tell us about this secret nature and the world that she has created. Yes. Here he's making a distinction between he and she. In the previous canto, we had that, no, that he is the master of existence who enters into this creation that he's made, and he submits himself to his own conscious force, the mighty mother. So this Shakti, this secret nature, she's a form of the mother. She's not the supreme divine mother, but she's a force, she's a power of the mother. She's a dynamic power, no? And he there is the Lord. So the Lord has made this outward world. There's this secret nature who is ruling particularly this intermediate zone between the material world and the fully formed subtle worlds. That's how I understand it. So now he's going to tell about she, this secret nature, what she can do. Patty, would you read?
In her mysterious moods, divorced from the maker's laws, she too as sovereignly creates her theme. Her will shaping the undetermined vast, making a finite of infinity. She too can make an order of her caprice, as if her rash superb wagered to outvie the veiled creator's cosmic secrecies. The rapid footsteps of her fantasy, amid whose falls wonders like flowers rise, are surer than reason, defter than device, and swifter than imagination's wings. Or she new fashions by the thought and word, compels all substance by her wand of mind.
Yes, thank you. So how does she do all this? She uses the power of mind. The wand is that magic stick that the fairy or the witch has. She uses it to command her powers. No? When she waves her wand, gives her command, utters her mantra, then things happen. No? So in this case, the magic wand is the power of mind. And she, all those things that the almighty occultist has done, she can do similar things in imitation, as if she's trying to do better than him, as if in her pride, in her rash superb, she's wagering, as if she's made a bet that she can do better than the Lord. To outvie means to compete and go beyond the veiled creators. Cosmic secrecies, all the secrets of the material universe. So she really can do magical things. She refashions new shapes, everything by the thought and word. And she can compel all substance, material substance and subtle substance, with using her wand of mind. Justin.
Mind is the mediator of divinity.
powers can undo all nature's work. Mind can suspend or change Earth's great law. A fantasy from Earth's habits draws a seal. The leaden grip of matter it can break. Indifferent to the angry stare of death, it can immortalize a moment's work. A simple fiat of its thinking force, the casual pressure of its slight ascent, can liberate the energy dumb and pent within its chambers of mysterious trance. It makes the body sleep, the puissant arm holds still the breath, the beating of the heart, while the unseen is found, the impossible done, communicates without means the unspoken thought. It moves events by its bare, silent will, acts at a distance without hands or feet.
Thank you. Nowadays, with our materialist education, we tend not to believe that pure mind power can be this powerful. We think it has to depend on matter for everything. But here it says it can suspend or change Earth's concrete law, the laws of physics, the laws of matter, can be suspended or changed by the power of mind. But in order for that to happen, the mind has to become affranchised, set free from Earth habits, drowsy seal, as if our mind, or a great part of our mind, has been put to sleep just by this habit of matter, the habit of inertia, unconsciousness.
I wonder what it takes to get to this level, because and how much time it takes, because on this board out here, just outside this room, there's that description by Sri Aurobindo of what he was doing, how he was trying to affect things in the world.
Not only trying, actually doing it.
Yeah, but it didn't seem to have this level of the leaden grip of matter to break, that kind of thing, you know what I mean? He kept saying that...
Well, neither Sri Aurobindo nor the mother wanted to do obvious miracles. They really didn't want to do that. They wanted to avoid it. But nevertheless, they did things.
It's interesting that about 3 or 4 centuries ago in the history of Christianity, when these powers were emerging amongst a group of people they called witches,
yes,
they used to burn them at the stake.
Yes.
So they completely suppressed them.
Well, because in fact, as they were saying, it was a kind of ancient knowledge. And it seems that it was particularly women who had this knowledge, but not only women. And certainly the Catholic Church feared them very, very much. And perhaps by that time, perhaps even the knowledge had got perverted. But perhaps it was simply that these old ladies who had this traditional knowledge handed down from grandmother to grandmother, they were very vulnerable, actually. They could be very easily attacked and charged, and nobody could defend them. So, yes, but there are people in all cultures who have access to this knowledge in one way or another. So we know that mother could control the weather, but she didn't like to do that. No, she said it's not good to interfere with these processes. Yes, Patricia.
Well, this is referring to pure mind, or the power of pure mind, I think.
I don't know. It's the power of mind. In this case, these powers have been given to Asvapati as part of his spiritual development. And what Sri Aurobindo and Mother tell us is that that's the way that they should come. They can be acquired in other means, no? And then it's more dangerous. But if they come by themselves as a product of spiritual development, then they will be used purely. Otherwise, it's not so sure. No, we know these stories about the early days of the ashram, you know, when stones suddenly started falling and hitting people. You know. It was magic. It was black magic being done by somebody there in Pondicherry. And Mother knew exactly what to do. You know. And then the person, the magician who was responsible, he almost died. And the people, his family sent a message to Sri Aurobindo, and Sri Aurobindo said, oh, for a few stones, no? and the person got better. But that would be the natural consequence, actually, of a misuse of these powers against a very spiritually highly developed person.
So the important thing is that these kind of powers have to be surrendered to divine will.
That's it, yes, exactly, yes. Should be, yes. And of course in the ashram library, perhaps there is still, there used to be a cupboard, special cupboard, where all the books on this topic were there, and they were kept locked, and only with Mother's permission, somebody could perhaps have access. But also Huta was preparing, at the time when she passed away, a book on occultism, on whatever Mother had told her about occultism, about the power of mind. And I'm sure they were very, very interesting things. Mother was trained as an occultist. No? She had her own natural aptitude, but then when she met Theon and Alma, she received a very, very complete and thorough training in control of these forces. And she tells a story about how Theon, in his house in Algeria, when she was staying there, some local people came and they were bothering him for some reason, I don't know what it was. And this gigantic table in the middle of the room, he just made it rush towards them. And they left and they didn't bother him anymore. He was a kind of magician. And I don't think he was a very spiritually developed person. It was this, but it's this power of mind and will to suspend or change Earth's concrete law that allows such things to be done. What were you muttering, Don?
Why is the world such a mess as it is today?
You mean the occultists should set it right?
Why aren't they busy helping things settle it out? The Middle East needs them desperately. Nature and the elimination of various animals and plants and so on there.
That's why I...
Tales of what happened in this little incident, but here's a large general thing that humanity is destroying itself and destroying nature.
Yes. So we're in the midst of a huge transitional phase. But I'm very, very confident that all these terrible things, this pollution and overpopulation and all this, that it can be set right. It's just that humanity as a whole has, or a certain proportion of humanity has to reach a certain level before it can happen. And meanwhile, we have to take all these dreadful challenges and happenings as a kind of spur for that. But just we ordinary people, what we can do is offer things to Mother and Sri Aurobindo and pray for their intervention, because they know where intervention is needed. With our limited consciousness, we don't know what is needed. So if we had the power to interfere, we wouldn't necessarily do the right thing. You know?
Because the game on this earth is to turn darkness into light. So. Are we having a collective awakening? fix these things, no? If everything was perfect, people would take it for granted that they, yeah, or they would be bored or something. That's why they don't want to go to heaven and
stay there. Of heaven and bored, no?
But anyway, here Sri Aurobindo, is telling us about the powers of mind, no?
Mind is a mediator divinity.
Yes.
Its power can undo all nature's work. So it is a positive thing or a...
It can be used either way. Can be used either way. It depends on the knowledge and the will that's using it.
But it's a great thing, no? Nature does anywhere in the experiment.
It's a great tool for a higher will. It's a dangerous tool for a lower will.
I think another example is very telling, that we need also to express appreciation to nature or to the environment, because whenever she came to a country where it was dry, also to India, then the rain came down, and she said, and the people had been astonished, why it's raining? And then she said, because I'm friend with rain. Rain is my friend, so there's a positive relation to it.
So that, can you elaborate this? Mind can sustain or change heart's cognitive loss.
Which line?
This is at the bottom of page 84. It's line 383. Mind is a mediator divinity. A mediator is someone who goes in between.
It's
a divine power for mediating. Its powers can undo all nature's work. So all that work that Mother Nature has done, mind is able to undo that. It can overrule what nature says and does. Mind can suspend or change Earth's concrete law. Mother says we believe automatically that if it's raining, if we step out into the rain, we will get wet. But she says it's not necessarily so. It's not like that, no? But because we are convinced by this earth habit that it is like that, that fire burns, that rain makes us wet, that things are like this and like that, cause and effect, we're totally convinced by that, our minds. So in order to be able to change that, we'd have to change our consciousness first. Does that answer your question a little bit?
Well, I was thinking that in this generation, last term, you have seen few have achieved this kind of mind?
I would not know. But I...
it's a great thing to know that mind can all do all nature's work and change us completely.
But that's not this little frontal human mind that we are using 99% of the time. It's the power of mind itself, no? There's matter, there's life, there's mind, there's spirit. So these are instruments, basically, these powers or principles, which can be used by a higher consciousness or a lower consciousness. Higher consciousness naturally is more effective in its use and purer. But it... Yes, the next pages tell us many things, yes. But here...
I think we have to have a supermind to be able to apply this properly. That's why I was thinking that prayer, at least for me, is the most effective way.
Yes.
Because what you mentioned about the lady praying to get the rain.
Yes.
So when I write this prayer, Mother, your highest will be done regarding whatever I put it in front of her photo, I find it's absolute magic.
Yes.
I have only met one other person who said he does that, and he also finds that it's miraculous.
Yes.
I think this is the principle of voodoo, if I'm not mistaken. They write things down, only the voodoo uses only for cursing people.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, this principle of writing the thing,
yes.
I think they write it, put it inside a bottle, and put it in the stream.
Yeah.
So it's an occult practice, but they use it for the dark forces.
A simple occult practice, which Mother shared with her children, it was that if you have thoughts or anxieties that are bothering you, and they're really bothering you, they're in your mind and you can't get rid of them, she said, write them down. Try to write it down as clearly, formulate as clearly as possible what's wrong and write it down. And then tear it up 5 times. So I have used this many times in my life.
But the other positive way of writing
Of course, yes, and offering to her, yes. But the thing about it is that you've expressed, your mind has expressed what was bothering it. No? But then you've said, well, all right, you expressed it, but now let's be rid of it. Just that the trouble is that we always want to express what's bothering us. And we just express it to other people, and we're just sharing our bother. No? But if we don't share our bother, if we write it down secretly and tear it up, or if it's very bad, sometimes you get a very, very horrible message from somebody, you can burn it. No? So this is very simple occultism, but still, no? These are ways in which mind can be used to improve things.
There is another occult practice Mother suggested, which I really find effective, is to, when you have a shower, you think that you are cleaning your past so that you can have
a rest. What a very nice thing to do, yes. Washing everything away. Yes. And some people do it when they go to bed at night. You know? Oh, that's all past. Wake up fresh and new in the morning.
I had always thought that Sri Aurobindo was only for meditation and not prayer until I read that Tales of Prison Life.
Mm-hmm.
And there he really extols the power of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
What it did for him. It's really interesting.
So it's time to pause, and we can hear Mother reading some of the lines from this section.
What might we do?
We stopped on page 85 at line 397. Acts at a distance without hands or feet. I didn't finish describing. We can go back to line 381 and next time. Yes, all right. Page 84, yeah. 381.
Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.